Welcome back to another episode of the Real Bars Read podcast. We have an amazing guest today, Brandon Rashad Butts, who is a writer, director, producer, and bookstore manager based in the DMV area. His full-length plays, Personal Protection and Reclamation, have received readings at the Baltimore Center Stage. His short plays, Between Us and Profiled, have been produced at the Manhattan Repertory Theater, the Secret Theater, and Blue Pearl Productions. He is co-creator of Vigilant, which received a workshop at Flying V Theater. He's contributed to an editorial piece with Huffington Post Black Voices, Black Hair Defined. His short story, The Red Barn, was published in the Three Element Review. Brennan has also served as a Manhattan Theater Club Directing Fellow, a stage choreographer and Director Society Observer, and producing fellow at the Baltimore City Stage. He also has an amazing Instagram page. You can find him at B-Rad Books. This is Brandon. Brandon, how are you doing?
Hey, Brandon.
I was like, geez, at heart. I mean, it's like, because after that intro, I was like, wow, did he get to do the research over here? Wow, it's like, gosh, I'm so like, wow, I appreciate the shout out, I guess. But yeah, thank you. I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. Glad, happy to be here. Yeah, I'm Brandon. I'm just a bookstore manager in Baltimore these days, predominantly. But yeah, I still do my thing. So I'm just happy to be here and glad to be a part of the Real Bars Read podcast, because it's been a good time just being a listener. So yeah,
thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much.
So tell us a little bit about the book that you chose to talk about and the first time that you read it.
So the book that I chose to talk about is Notes from a Young Black Chef by Kwame Onwuachi. About, I guess, like 2011 or so, I started working in the restaurant industry myself. And I always had like these like, I guess like plans and goals or what have you. Though at the time, it was kind of just like, you know, I got to pay for college somehow. But like, you know, I always, I grew up like in the kitchen and stuff like that. And, you know, I wanted to kind of pursue like cooking professionally a bit more for a while. And so I rode that through for over the course of like 8 or 9 years, until the point where I felt like I had just experienced so much in the industry, food service industry specifically, as a Black man in particular, that just really caused a lot of like internal issues and divides and, you know, just thoughts going on where I was over beginning to consider things that were false about myself as and take them for truth. And it was all because of the environment that I was going in and putting in, you know, no less than 40 hours a week in. And I had to change that. And so it's like, you know, for me, I had like made this decision to sort of leave the food industry, professionally speaking, altogether. And then around about the time of, I would say, summer of 2021, I came across this book. And I had like watched Top Chef or whatever, and I saw Kwame on there. And I had known and I'd heard about him since then. And I said, oh, and the title is Notes from a Young Black Chef. Man, I'm gonna have to read this. And then I read it, and it just, I don't know, it encompassed so many things that I felt like if I had this book, maybe I would have navigated that situation or my relationship with the food industry as a whole a lot better. I feel like I ultimately made the best decision for myself, but like I felt like this book would have helped me just navigate it. And that was a big part of the story. I think the fact that it is international, it's an international story as well as just like, you know, in New York, you know, I love the fact that he goes, he includes his past in Africa and like his going back there. Then just the struggles with being someone who wants more and doesn't want to fall into a standard 9-to-5, driving the line or like a, as like a cook or whatever, right there on the line all the time, but want to do more and like being able to invest in whatever your job is. That is something that I feel like everybody can connect to, just wanting something more of your day to day and it to be, to mean something to you and actually give it your all. And, you know, how that, you know, the level up, you know, I love a level up, you know, especially when you're the supposed underdog. That's the thing. It's like you look at him and you just expect he's another cook or whatever, you know, but then like, you know, that's under that underestimation kind of only fueled the fire that is today because he really is like so successful. And, you know, I felt so like seen and, you know, not alone, I guess, reading the book. And it was just a perspective that I hadn't had yet. And one that I really, really wanted. And so finding this book was like right on time, ultimately. So yeah, that's, and I, you know, I still feel this way about it now, honestly, refreshing my mind with it and things like that. It was really, yeah, it's just a good read.
Wow. Yeah, it is a great read, but that was an incredible answer. That was serious, Brandon. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. No, I mean, because it is. I mean, that's just what it, I don't know. It's like, again, like it just, I felt it really gave me that reaction because it was just, man, like it's so vivid and such a clear through, just a good, well-presented memoir. It's, you know, it's one of the reasons that I love reading memoirs because, you know, I like to hear and learn, talk to people and things like that. But, you know, when you invest 300 pages into your life and like such a specific part of it and you do it so well, you know, it's really cool.
Yeah, the concept of paying your dues, I think, is one of my least favorite. It was echoed a lot in the book. I want to ask, like, in theater, how is paying your dues kind of communicated or in the bookstore world? I'm sure it's not as cutthroat as cooking or theater is, but.
Yeah, no, because they can be pretty, you know, it can be pretty in the theater world. you know, it kind of depends on like where you fall on the line of all of the opportunities that there are. So like an actor, a director, a writer, what have you, are all gonna have different challenges. And I think as a whole though, I think that there is more supposed, if not real, respect that comes along with somebody who's been hitting the grind for a long time and been doing it for a really long time or what have you. And so that can translate to commitment, but there's this thing where it's, they tell you if you're not the thing, it has nothing to do with you. You know, you could come in and do the best performance or submit the best application or what have you, and you still not get the job. And rather than racking your brain about why, you should just keep doing it or keep moving or whatever. So you're kind of just stuck in this cycle. Mm. And I had to find, you know, a way. It's like, you know, how do you create your own opportunity? How do you, you know, make your own thing? That way you can sort of break the cycle because it is inherently taxing to sort of, you know, go through, you know, that process specifically if you're an actor. I feel when your job is to just show up, do the best you can. And if you get the gig, you get the gig. If you don't, you don't. Just try again or what have you. And inherently, there is a little bit of that in just the job search as a whole, because that's where it's like it was really interesting in the hiring process. At the bookstore recently, it was really you know, a show of how we're all, again, just this grind, this cycle of just kind of putting yourself out there and doing the best you can in order to get the gig, if you will. When, you know, again, like that cycle breaking part is, you know, how do you create your own gig? Like, how do you find that opportunity, that chance for yourself, and like create it for yourself? That way you can do something that ultimately makes you feel fulfilled. And, you know, I feel like, you know, the aspect of paying the dues, you know, is real, because you can get experience and training and learn how it works. And, you know, there's a, you know, that's a, you know, sort of yin and yang sort of situation. You know, you take the good and bad. But, you know, at some point, you know, they also teach you in theater, you know, you learn the lines, you know, your blocking, you know, the choreo, you know, not throw it all out the window and just be the person, if you will. So it's like, you know, at some point you got to just throw all of that, take all of that part and just kind of throw it away and kind of focus on yourself and like as yourself as a big picture and like what that means, what that story is and stuff like that. And, go for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I really felt that at the part of the book when Kwame was at that Michelin star place, what was the name? EMP. And right, with under that tyrannical chef who, you know, didn't appreciate him at the smoke station, just yelling at him and his crew like all the time. And as soon as he says that, you know, right, he's going to make his own restaurant, he's like, you can't be a chef. Like, you aren't ready for that. You have to pay your dues. And after all that BS, you know, Kwame was still like, no, I'm going to go. And that's just as you're saying, you have to carve your own lane. And what do you think? So you said that you felt seen, right? Having worked in the food service industry, reading this book, like what aspects of your job that you want to share, you know, in food service, do you feel most echoed in this book strongly?
Definitely the tyrannical, white patriarchal figure as a whole. I can count on one hand and have plenty of fingers left over the number of non-white men that I worked for in the food industry specifically. And the through line between the majority of them was that there's this massive ego that is just fueled by the kitchen fires, apparently, because it is often the driving horse behind all of the ingenuity of fine dining and the American experience that we all have come to know and love. Like, trust me, I love going out to a nice restaurant and just it being good and, you know, whatever, you know, the experience of it. But like, you think back on the line and on who's on the line, which of course you don't as a diner, but you look back at the kitchen and, you know, it's usually somebody, you know, demanding high capacity and high velocity out of a line of people who are Black and brown. And it's sort of a constant, because I've worked in, you know, I worked everything from like Chili's to another, myself worked at a 4-star restaurant in New York. I think that's the highest level that I worked. And throughout that whole line, you know, it's all been the same. I worked in for universities, hotels, kitchens, you know, a lot of things. And it's all kind of been the through line. And it's like, you know, some situations, you know, it's more mild and it's cool. It's just, you know, about the food ultimately, which is always the best part, or sometimes, you know, the focus is creating a dining experience or what have you, a good time for the customer specifically. But that through line has always been, again, that tyrannical aspect of it, for sure. And like that part needs major uprooting in general, and some replacements need to be made across the board. So that part really jumped out for me. I also truly connected with his exploration, like being on the boat. And like, I always, it was like, I ultimately don't know if I could cook out on the boat with something like that. But, you know, just that was really cool. Him like being out there, you know, cooking on this boat. Just the journey and the story behind that, even again with the the white male issue that he ran into often over there as well. It was just cool to like know that, you know, I too have like different like culinary desires now that I have sort of left the food industry proper. And so it's like, well, I still like to cook. I still want to, you know, do good times with food or what have you. What does that mean for you? And, you know, to see what that means for him to like realize, you know, maybe this opportunity can pay my bills, but also teach me something or give me a different perspective or, you know, see something fun or different can come out of this or what have you. And, you know, it ultimately did, you know, and I think that, again, just that, you know, that willingness, his constant willingness to sort of stick his neck out there for what he feels is a good moment for himself or something that he's actually interested and excited to do is really cool. Because ultimately, as a cook, cooks are very typically very prideful in general. Like they really care about the food that they make, and because they have to ultimately give it to somebody else. And that, you know, there's a lot of care and protection that comes with that. And so seeing it through the lens again of Black eyes was really enlightening in a way that it allowed me to see that and remind myself that, you know, this isn't, you know, there's a lot of us out here all doing this in order to try to, you know, make the best of the overall system that is the issue. And you know, really go for our dream, you know. So it's a great like dream story, and you know, one that comes to fruition as well. Yeah, like those are probably like the two big ones for sure.
Yeah, I love how Kwame talks about food as a story, stories as food, right? And you know, in particular, you know, he made the realization and said it at one point that, you know, in all of his training and work in the restaurant industry, he never actually got to cook the food that he grew up on. So, I mean, Brandon, you mentioned before just how you grew up in the kitchen. I'm curious, you know, what is your story in food, right? Like, what do you most like to make? Like, what did you grow up on? Who were you cooking with? Like, could you just describe some of that for us too?
Yeah, definitely. So I grew up, I'm from Richmond originally, but my family is sort of rooted in Emporia, Virginia, which is more further south, so more country. it was my mom and, you know, both of my grandmothers ultimately that taught me mostly, of course. And of course, we had my great grandmother who on my paternal side, who was also, you know, she raised four kids and they all had kids and, you know, so forth. And next thing you know, there's 40 people at Thanksgiving, you know, so it's, you know, it's all kind of a trickle down. So, you know, of course, I have aunts that, you know, there's never any like battles or food showdowns or anything like that. But, you know, it's like, you know, I love my aunt's mac and cheese the most, or like my stepmom's potato salad the most, or whatever, you know, there is all of that too. But it's like, you know, it really was this massive conglomerate of Black women that ultimately taught me how to cook. And it always is like my favorite thing because I'm so appreciative to each and every one of them. And it was, so it's like growing up in a single parent household, eventually at some point, you got to learn how to like take care of yourself or what have you. And my mom always did like work the job and then she went to school and she raised the kid. And she chased her own dreams as well. And that was always a big thing that I paid attention to because it was always somehow the laundry was done and the food was on the table. It was, everything was always so special in the mix of all that too. So it's like, for whatever reason, well, not for whatever reason, I just love food in general. I always gravitated towards watching her cook or just wanting to help her cook and things like that. And then same thing with my grandmother. If I went to my grandma's after school, I just gravitated towards watching her cook and wanting to help her cook. And then next thing you know, probably by 13 or 12, probably, it's like I'm making like dinner for the evening or whatever as like contribution to like, you know, the household or whatever. And, you know, so it was like, you know, next thing you knew, I was just making dinner and I didn't really see it. As anything other than not a chore, but it was one, if it was a chore, it was one that definitely I didn't mind doing. It was just like a part of just, you know, the contribution to the household at some point. But it was really fun in the process, you know, just spending that time with, you know, my family bonding, you know, talking about life and catching up and, you know, you know, I realized that like now, these days, when I go home and we cook or what have you, it's, you know, I find myself asking more questions about how this is done or how, you know, how'd you get your, you know, sweet potato pie this way or what have you. It's very, very traditional, like soul food, Black Southern cuisine or whatever, all the time when I go back home. And so I am just always asking those questions. That way I at least have it being a person who is more like, you know, I'll have, you know, I'll just have the grilled chicken and some broccoli and potatoes. That's fine. Or whatever, you know, versus like it's a whole ordeal back home. I'm constantly asking those questions and, you know, showing that I can do it. And then I take that pride in showing them that I know what I'm doing. And of course, they're side coaching from the side, making sure that I do this right. And don't add that because we don't like that. It's like, I know, you know, it's definitely always that vibe too. And it's just, I find that I'm still like in that process of like gaining those moments where I feel like I'm like learning in the kitchen still, or I'm still trying to prove myself in the kitchen. It's like, they're not a tough audience at all. Like, you know, they're very supportive and very loving or what have you, but it's still like that cook's pride of like, it's got to be right, you know, because I'm cooking for like my loved ones at that particular point, which is always like my favorite thing. Like my friends and my family know that, like, you know, if we're at anybody's house or whatever, then I'll be in the kitchen because I'll be cooking something or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. It was I feel like my story's still developing over time, but definitely, you know, my family, specifically the Black women in my family, got me to this point for sure.
That's a really, really great story. Beautiful. And one of the funnier parts of the book, I thought, was when Kwame too was at his friend's house, his white friend's house. And he tries Mrs. Fran's pot roast and he straight up says, like, what's wrong with this? I thought it was the most hilarious question because it's so innocent, but it's like he's like freaking out, not freaking out, but quite questioning why there's no flavor. On a funny moment, what are some of your cooking?
Oh, man.
You've made. Or food that other folk have made where you've asked the same question. What went wrong?
Oh, man. Yeah, it was so funny because I'll start with this one because I told, I was hanging out with a friend not too long ago And I told them that I was going to be doing this podcast. And I said, I wonder if I'll need to like think of like, I said, what are my stories? Like, what were things that like happened? Like, what are the funky things? Like, of course, you know, I remember the challenges and the, you know, even some of the other good moments, but I was like, but what are the funny parts, what have you? And I realized that like, so this was in college. I did an internship with theater one summer. And it was a variety show. It was, during the fall, sorry, because it was a Thanksgiving theme variety show, comedy show. And with your ticket, you got a meal that was prepared by the staff at the company. So I don't remember exactly how we divided the responsibilities, but I knew that I did want to do the turkey. So it's like I chose, you know, the turkey or what have you. And so like once we got the groceries for everything, you know, we divided up everything. And I said, okay, I'll make like 8 of these butterball turkeys. If this other person who also wanted to make turkeys, I was like, well, if you make 2 of them, I'll make these 8. Because they also wanted to do something else, but they also wanted to do some of the turkey too. And I was like, okay, cool. So I won't go into mine, but I threw down. And so, you know, I brought mine to the show, you know. Just like serve, you know, to you know, my contribution. And then our other friends brought theirs. And I sat there right beside mine because I was at the turkey. My job was to divide, like, I think the turkey and the mashed potatoes that day or what have you. And I was fair. I gave a slither of mine and I gave a slither of theirs or what have you. They were just, I mean, we had maybe 80 people in total. By the end of it all, he only had 2 pans of his turkey and I had like 8 pans of my turkey ultimately. Through the first pass, I was down to like a pan and a half left. And I was like, oh gosh, I didn't make enough. There was plenty of our friends left. It was a very, good. It was very dry ultimately. And so I tried to put out, you know, I'm a team player. I took some of the juices from mine and put it on theirs. Even somebody came by for seconds. And she said, "Could I have some more turkey, please?" And I went to go give him a piece of his. She said, "Oh no, no, this one, please." And like pointed to mine. I said, "Oh, give the people what they want." It's like it's not. You know? I'm not trying to hurt no feelings. And then sort of similarly, for one Thanksgiving, it's always Thanksgiving with these stories. It's the thing. That's what's really funny. It's you know, it's always when it's the culmination, the most important culmination of food in one day. It's always this day. But, you know, we did Thanksgiving at my aunt's in Pennsylvania. And there was a friend that brought mac and cheese, and her kids and her family loved the mac and cheese too. But my aunt, my other aunt who came up too, brought her mac and cheese. And like, that's, you know, me and my cousins, my sisters, we all like, that's, I mean, we're ready, like plate in hand, fork in hand. And the thing is, the friend of the family's kids also had some of my aunts. And it was just, it was really interesting to see the sort of switch, I guess, in the taste difference or what have you. It was always really like those accidental food battles, you know, it's, they're dangerous. They're scary, you know? Yeah, but no, it's, I don't know. I definitely have like my food rules, I guess, you know. I'm always mindful of the company potluck. How many pets do you have and what are they? And I'll leave that at that. You know, I'm also just an adventurer in general. Like I always like to try new things or try new foods or, you know, if someone, again, like I love to cook for people. And so it's like, that's not some special thing. A lot of people, if you love to cook, you often do love to cook for other people too. So, you know, if it happens, you know, I'll definitely give it a shot. But, you know, it's, I'm definitely always down to like go out to eat for sure, always.
So I was going to ask, I don't have many fine dining experiences, but from Chef Kwame's stories, it like See, here's what I was thinking of, because we also, you know, grew up in a very like great loving household, amazing food, incredibly grateful for it, especially to like, you know, our mom, her mom, the Black women in our life who just are incredible cooks, right? And what I really love about it is that you can always taste the love, right? And then hearing Chef Kwame's stories of like all that's going on in the back, the racism, the anger, right? I was wondering, like, can you taste that in the food too, right? And I don't know if, you know, you have any fine dining experiences on the eater side where, you know, they were less than enjoyable, but could you just talk more about, you know, what that difference is actually like? You know, is it worth it? Do you enjoy yourself in those cases just the same way that you do with family and friends?
So like when I'm eating with in a fine dining setting versus when I'm in a fine dining setting versus when it's more friend and family vibe, you mean?
Yeah,
no, I mean, you definitely, it's, you know, for me, it's all about comfort. Like, even like, you know, like, oh my gosh, what's it called? And there's a place in, I think it's Carmine's, I think is what it's called. And it's, you know, it's all like family style dining or what have you. So like, but it's also like on the better end of, arguably on one of the better ends that you can access if you're living in Manhattan of Italian food. And, you know, what I love about there, why me and my friends went there often was because it wasn't like absorbent, but like you got like, you know, if you did, you, it was all family style, and like we were able to, you know, scrape up or whatever for our special occasions, and we would go there a couple of times, and it was always a good time, and it was just really good food, and it was all, I just remember the fact that it was all, you know, the lasagna was like lasagna for four, the meatballs and pasta was for four, and like, you know, everything was like meant to be shared and like have that, you know, that sort of, you know, shared experience. And like even my, you know, one of my friends and I hang out, you know, we'll often like, if we go to a spot where we want to do the shared plate thing or what have you, we always look at the menu and be like, oh, the Brussels sprouts sounds good. Oh yeah, the rock shell sounds good too. Oh, this is like, okay, I guess we're doing the shared plate thing. It's like, you know, it's like, that's always a good, I personally have always enjoyed that vibe of just, you know, everybody, you know, getting together and just like sharing with each other. Cause that ultimately just is what it is. And like, those are the better, for me, those are the better times. And those are the ones that I remember, albeit, you know, I do remember, you know, all of the times where it's like, you know, at us, say if like when I went to El Stoio della Pace a few times and just having, you know, they did this fish that was, it was a branzino that was like cooked in the salt casing, and they would like bring it out to you and like show you what that looked like first. And then they would like take it away and fillet it and bring it to you. And it was just like always so good. So like melt in your mouth. So like, it was amazing. Like, you know, it's like, I don't know. It's like, there is sometimes like, you know, when you have, you know, it's when it's about the experience, and like when the chef knows that it's not just about the food, it's about the customer's experience too. And that's why, you know, of course you have the front of house staff who manages that mostly, but like, you know, chef's contribution to that is always really like cool, you know, even when you think about the things in your life or the places that you go, what makes them special or what makes them a little different or what makes them fun or what have you. It doesn't even always have to be fine dining. It's like, what's that thing that the restaurant's presenting that brings you back or what have you? That's a restaurant that, you know, usually is managed or run by or has a cooking team that has someone special in their team or what have you. Because, you know, it's easy, you know, a lot of places start and fail, honestly, in the restaurant industry because they just give people a different kind of cuisine, or they give people food that they think they want, or they want to try to introduce them to something different or something new versus just focusing on the customer themselves, getting and growing, like giving them something that they want ultimately, because they'll tell you what they want. And, you know, it's, you know, you just got to listen to them or what have you. And then when you get to the food part, you know, it really is like, you know, that's where you have to learn how to, that's, again, this is, we're going back to that thing of like, take all the information and throw it out the window and do you. It's like, you know, you have to make this experience, you know, you have to please the eye, you know, you have to, you know, appeal to the senses, all of them. And you know, you have to do all this or whatever. Now just go for it and do it or what have you. And I think that Kwame showed that that's something that you have to learn. That's something that you have to try. That's something you have to fail at. That's something you have to see other people do and see them try and learn and fail at it too. It's like, it's sort of, it's this thing where you fill in the holes sort of that you feel like you were missing, or that the story that you hadn't seen yet or what have you. Well, that's because it's yours to tell. And so it's, and I feel like once he realized that, you know, that's when it really like kicked off for him. And he really like, when he had the opportunity to give the, I forget if it was 9 courses or more, or 12, the full dining experience there, you know, being able to like lay out that story in such a plain, well, it's, when I say plain, it was like, cause it wasn't, the food described it, the way he described it, it didn't sound plain at all, but like for what you feel like is like the best, the most basic, simplest way that you can explain yourself is, that's a really cool, I feel like that can only be a really cool feeling. And so, you know, really taking that chance with the food, I think is so key when you're doing that, and like really making and putting your all into the food when you're cooking, whether it's professionally or with your family and friends, what have you. I feel like that chance is just like, you know, because even when you're just cooking something you've cooked 100 times before, there's still that check-in of like, you know, how did so-and-so used to do it? How did, how many pinches of this was it or what have you? You know, you have your own way of processing it, however you do. And I feel like, you know, that all jumps out in both of those scenarios too. It really just depends at the end of the day, which one you like and you go for more. I personally definitely have the most memories with the, friends and family aspect, though, for sure.
So next to notes from a young Black chef, like, what are some of the other really influential books that you've read in the last couple of years?
In terms of like food or in general?
Anything.
Yeah, no, I well, the one that I will also add while we're here is the Cooking Gene by Michael W. Twitty, that spans like over 3 centuries of food history in a way that allows us to truly reclaim our history. You know, it's so thorough, well researched, like literally homegrown, like in his own hands he made this book. And it, you know, if you choose to read it, you'll understand why. He's truly he gave us something that I felt like we really needed as a people, honestly. And I can only recommend that book 100 times. It's so good. For me, recently, I don't know, like I have been, cause like I've really been starting this reconnection with books in general. I started it, I would say, during the pandemic. And during that time, I feel like I'm still catching up and reading a lot of like the backlist stuff, in addition to keeping up with everything that everyone on Bookstagram is recommending highly. And, you know, just being, of course, a bookstore manager now, trying to keep it up and keep it fresh. So, you know, I've managed to reconnect with Toni Morrison really heavily lately. And, you know, I've sort of gone on this journey of like reading, trying to read all of her stuff in no particular time but or order, but just read all her stuff. And I think that been like really diving in as much as I have lately into her work has reminded me why she's one of the few Black authors that I read so early on in high school. And I felt like she's still communicates things that are still present in the here and today. And it's because she highlights us and she focuses on us first and foremost. And I feel like that's often what media is aiming to do. However it does it is, you know, always arguable and questionable. But I feel like her focus on Black people as a whole and our trials and tribulations is something that I'm constantly pondering with each next book that I read. I am almost finished with Song of Solomon right now. But then I would also say more contemporary, I would say that Jesmyn Ward has very quickly and easily become one of my favorite writers. Salvage the Bone. I always am just bereft when I think about that book because it's just a family of survival. Everybody has this thing that they need to survive, whether it's our protagonist, who's a 15-year-old pregnant girl, the boys in the family who are young boys themselves, and so they have the struggle of just staying alive as young Black boys in all of those aspects. They have this dog that is a prize fighter and they need that dog to survive, but also this dog has a litter and they need that litter to survive. That way they can sell it and that way they can have money for whatever they have going on. So many different personal levels of survival, as well as the bonding together to look after and raise each other when they don't really have a parental figure accurately. All of this going on in the middle of the fact that Hurricane Katrina is right around the corner. And it is just, it's just the way she just rips through your emotions is just a way that I've come to find a way to love, because it's so vivid. It's so, she's very, very good at what she does. And I'm very grateful I found her in this time. I would say that The Yellow Wife by Sadiqua Johnson, has also greatly had a great effect on me recently. I have read more, not recently, but I would say I would throw out there also by P. Jelly Clark, Ring Shout. It's a great story, if you love, if you can deal with horror a little bit, but it is three Black women are monster hunters, and the monsters in this sort of created space are called Ku Kluxes, and they are ultimately fighting, and they band together. There's a sword wielder, there's a bomb builder, and then there's a gunslinger. And it's so well done to be so short. And I really see it being maybe an animated adult series or something like that. That's what I really want for it one day. And then also I'll say They're There by Tommy Orange. This has been around for a few years now, but I read it last year and I'm still thinking about it. I almost suggested it for this one. But I wanted to do, I decided on Kwame, but I almost suggested There. We need to, you know, diversify our literature. I know I can always read more Indigenous stories, and I'm glad that this one came into my life because it's amazing. Very fast paced. It's a multi-narrative, but it's not hard to follow at all. You know, all of these people are getting ready for this, for the biggest powwow that has ever taken place. And we get to learn who these people are in the process, every single person, including the people who don't have the best of intentions. And all these people ultimately meet it, come to this powwow, and everything that ensues. I won't spoil anything, but it's just so good. Tommy Orange was great. Those are the ones that I think I'll stop there. Yeah, I think those are all the books.
What's the name of the last book? Brandon?
They're there.
Oh, they're there. Okay. Awesome. Yeah, they're there. And we need to get like you out here, Brandon. Like I'm reading The Cooking Gene right now, and you know, working my way through some Toni Morrison. But everything else you said, I have yet to get into. So thank you for the recommendations, for real.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, the backlist in the TBR is massive. Ultimately, so like I feel like I have a lot of catching up to do myself. Honestly, but yeah.
Right. So when you mentioned reconnecting with books in the last couple of years, like, could you share more of that story?
Yeah, I guess it's common that once you get into college, or if not, maybe a little before, there's always some time where you fall off of reading. I find it interesting because, you know, is this something that we feel like we need to let go of because we have to grow up and we have to do other things or what have you? I feel like I keep coming back to this point of a lot of people that I know or speak to say that they fell off of leisure reading somewhere in late high school, early college. And that's very interesting to me because I myself am one of those people. And you know, I don't know, I don't really have a rhyme or a reason. It just kind of happened. And during the pandemic, of course, it hit, and I picked it back up because I felt like I needed something to do. I needed to, you know, find something to like busy myself and, you know, keep steady, because who knew how long we were going to be in the middle of this lockdown or what was going to go on and so forth. So I just looked on the bookshelf and I realized, okay, there's a lot of books here that I haven't read yet. So let's just get started. And so it's like I started with like one of Mindy Kaling's book, Amy Poehler's book, Tina Fey's book, Ta-Nehisi Coates, We Were 8 Years in Power, and Fight Club, and Four Agreements, and a few others that are like, you know, like it was an interesting mix, given what I feel like I read more of today. But you know, I was just like, you know, I really was like actually enjoying and engaging with each of these moments or what have you, and you know. I don't even remember how or why. I just realized that I wanted to start collecting more and like start building on the bookshelf and things like that. And so I started shopping like at the nearby bookstore and trying to attend more and keep up with that. And then I also realized, you know, oh, I think I've heard of Bookstagram. I think that's a thing. And so I started like searching around on Bookstagram, and you know, I just saw that it is a thing. You know, it is really, you know, it really is like a massive area where we truly cover a lot of ground over there. And you know, I was like, I think I want to be a part of this. Ultimately, I think I'm reading enough, or I plan on. Like, yeah, I think I can keep up with this. This would be cool. And, you know, at that point, I had just seen, like, I really, you know, it was more about like recon and just gather intel. So, you know, I started like scanning a bunch of pages, seeing what people were reading, reading reviews, reading, you know, just reading more about what I should read or might want to read or what have you. And so that's when it started to shift more into like, They're There and Ring Shout and Men We Read by Jesmyn Ward and How Long Until Black Future Month and several other books. And so, you know, it really, and you know, I joined in and like I said, April, I would say in April of 2021. And, you know, I've gotten so many or found and seen so many really cool things since then, because I had joined the bookstore that February officially. another big decision to sort of enter the whole book space more permanently. And it was, you know, after all of these recommendations and things like that, I just found myself actually genuinely wanting to read more and catch up and keep up. And, you know, the more I hear, you know, I remember hearing on here, there was a live, I can't remember why, or maybe it was just, you know, I can't remember why there was a live, but somebody threw out Gloria Naylor. And I said, I know I've heard Gloria Naylor, but I haven't read Mama Day or anything yet. And so it's like, okay, that's on my list. You know, it's like, it's getting me, you know, it's really like helping me stay like informed. Is like what are books and who are authors that I might be interested in, because I do have a lot of different interests, and you often just don't know where to start when you are that type of person, which I think that most of us are. So it's like, it's really just kind of helped me find, like, I have a place to start, which just helped me feel like I can find a place, and I have. And so it's like, it's really, I felt like, you know, okay, I'm picking up reading more, and it's all for, I feel like I can actually like engage with other people now over it, which I feel like maybe was another part that I felt like was missing, because I was definitely like one of those kids that, you know, was like, you know, cool with everybody, if not like overtly popular. But like, I definitely had this thing where I would like go and like be in the library, or I would be in like a theater program or whatever. So there's always that quote unquote weird thing or what have you. Weird is cool. So whatever. But like, you know, there was always that thing. And reading was one of those things. And it's cool to like know that, you know, there's this massive community where we're all just finding that joy in actually loving reading and loving being a reader. So it's cool to just come back to that. So I feel like, you know, and, you know, again, I'm still sort of on the beginning of that journey too, because it's only been a year, arguably. Well, officially, I guess you can say. Yeah, so, you know, it's fun just being on this ride, still trying to find that story. Yeah.
And what else are you looking forward to in 2022?
What else am I looking forward to in 2022? I'm looking forward to, man, I haven't even, you know, I don't know. Because I've kind of gone into 2022 on a very like depressant mindset. And, you know, I'm working, like, you know, I'm looking forward to, you know, projects I have coming down the line, of course. I'm looking forward to, you know, special events, like, and that I have coming up in family and personal life. Like, you know, I have a lot of that. But it's like, you know, one big picture thing is like, I don't know. It's like, I'm looking forward to just, I think it's because I turned 30 this year, like in a couple months. But I think I'm just looking forward to recentering and rezoning with myself, and just, you know, just again, because it's like sometimes you can be very like outstretched, and it's, you know, it's just in my nature to always like, you know, put on more or pile on more on the plate, as it were. And, you know, I'm, you know, this year has been all about just being present and being like in the moment and, you know, enjoying and accepting and being present with what you have here and now versus always working towards the next thing, which I have a really big habit of doing. And so it's like, yeah, I don't know. I think I'm really looking forward to whatever happens, because I feel like I'm just sort of let up to let whatever happen. And it's been cool so far, for sure.
Well, that's so amazing. And we thank you again for coming on the show and bringing this book on. Super interesting. A lot to learn here. And
yeah, seriously. Thanks so much, Brandon.
No, I really appreciate y'all doing this. I just, you know, I came across y'all's page, and, you know, it was essentially an immediate follow because I just thought it was really just ultimately like a dope vibe, but then realized that ultimately y'all are giving back, and I'm always pro. I'm pro giving back, and it's just in a way that's specific to us as readers and amplifying, you know, voices of the masses, if you will. Yeah. It's just a really cool overall, like, you know, podcast is a really cool platform, and to see that y'all brought it to readers is something that I really, the way that you bring it to readers is just, it's really fresh, honestly, so I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Real Ballers Read podcast. You can check out Brandon at his Instagram, BRadBooks, and you can find Notes from a Young Black Chef at your local bookstore or library. Thank you again for listening, and we'll catch you next time.